1340WNBS.com presents the Neil Bradley Show, your expanded look at local and regional sports with weekly guests or experts in their field. With today's show, here's Neil Bradley.
Hope you had a terrific Labor Day weekend. Josh Planos will join me in just a moment. But before I speak with Josh, I want to tell you what's coming up on the other side of our interview with Josh. We will get you caught up with what happened in high school football, the results from Friday night, OVC games, and what's ahead for this week. A little thumbnail sketch of that. So that is still ahead, coming up on the other side of our interview with Josh Planos. As we really start to get busy, we're going to add the NFL actual games, not the exhibitions or the preseason games for the NFL. We'll talk about the regular season, several developments that will impact the first week of games. But I want to start with college football. Josh, I was looking forward to, as much as I know you were, getting Nebraska's campaign started with Scott Frost as head coach, and it did start, but it had a really abrupt ending thanks to the storms. Sort of a surreal event over 24 hours there, wasn't it?
Yeah, you have to assume that if it wasn't the Scott Frost season opener at Nebraska, that Fox would have considered moving the kickoff up a ways, just because everybody knew that the storm was coming. But if anything, the kickoff actually got moved back. And so, I mean, maybe that's a blessing. I mean, I guess you would have had to have bumped it up a few hours to, have a chance at getting the entire game in. But there is something comforting knowing that, all we got was a kickoff. So it wasn't as though one team was clearly, out ahead of the other when the game had to get, canceled. But, yeah, I mean, it was a whole ordeal. You never know if the wording is correct. Canceled means a lot different, means something different than postponed. And, getting to the bottom of that was its own, black box of issues on Saturday night. But yep, next Saturday, on ABC, you'll get Nebraska and Colorado. And I know that the fans and the players are ready to get it going, because, last Saturday was kind of deflating in its own way.
One Big Ten team, their fan base was really close to probably hoping their game was stormed out. That's Penn State. They did survive against Appalachian State, but it took overtime, 45-38. Now, that wouldn't have been as embarrassing as Appalachian State beating Michigan years ago when they were still a level below. But now that App's at the FBS level, still they gave Penn State all they wanted, and Penn State able to survive.
Yeah, you really saw them, get taken down to the wire. That, they had a chance to win it a few times, including, what would have been, I believe, a game-winning field goal from 53 yards out there in the waning moments. But Penn State did enough. It seems like Trace McSorley really kind of steps into his own when it's a close game. You think back to the Rose Bowl. You think back to their win over Iowa a year ago. He seems to really, step up in crunch time, but that is definitely not what the fans were looking for in Happy Valley. Definitely not what the Big Ten fans were hoping to see from, one of the juggernauts, really, in the conference over the past few seasons. So, Penn State's got a lot to correct, and, we'll see if they can do so. But, Appalachian State, I give them a lot of credit. Anytime a team with that big of a resource disparity can come in and put on a show on the road and take a team down to the wire, I think that's about as impressive as you'll see. So, hats off to them, and I'm sure they'll have a terrific season the rest of the way.
There were several top 25 games where there were top 25 matchups. One of those involves sort of an article that you're working on for the Washington Post this week, and that is Notre Dame defeating Michigan 24-12. Big uproar online. Michigan wanting to make a coaching change, not Michigan, but some of the fans in season as they hit the panic button pretty early. Give me your take on the game and maybe on the future of Coach Harbaugh there.
Well, it was really kind of a boring game overall. I thought, Michigan looked really sloppy, that they had a chance to go down and tie it up, if not steal it there at the end, I think was maybe, undeserved. I think a lot of people who watched that game, if they, had seen what the scoreboard was, would assume that it would have been a blowout, and yet Michigan outgained Notre Dame, had a lot of opportunities that they just kind of, fumbled down their leg, I think that was not a great showing, especially given what we were kind of told to assume from Shea Patterson and this new offense. The offense has consistently been what's held back this team, and it looked like That might be the case moving forward, given, you know, what we saw. But I think that also takes away from Notre Dame's defensive game plan, which was lights out. I mean, they've got a really strong front seven. You know, Brandon, the quarterback, seemed like he took a pretty significant stride. It was a home game for Notre Dame. So, you know, it might just be a case of, you know, one team, you know, being an elite team and one team being, you know, maybe just a great team. So, you know, finding that silver lining is tough in the opening week. I think Michigan's got a lot to look forward to. I think Harbaugh has done a really nice job there, regardless of what you read online, because he's just kind of getting lambasted right now. But I think Michigan's got a lot to look forward to, and hopefully they can iron out some of those, you know, offensive deficiencies.
It was a wonderful opening week for the SEC. Tennessee, the only SEC team that lost, plus the league scored two marquee wins in Auburn, downing number 6 Washington 21-16. And LSU, a little easier time than I thought going up against Miami. They went 33-17. Tell me about those games.
Yeah, you never want to play an SEC Tigers team, I guess, in week one. That's mighty fine performances from both. Auburn's defensive line looked tremendous. I mean, I can't remember last time I saw Jake Browning under that much pressure, if ever. So that's you know, a really strong sign for them moving forward. Clearly, you need to have you know, some tenacity on the defensive end to compete in the SEC. You know, they, I thought, did, you know, just enough of a job to get it done. I thought Washington really kind of lost that game more than Auburn won it. I mean, to, I think, get 3 points out of three red zone trips is, you know, I don't know if you can ever win a football game that way. And that's, you know, exactly what Washington did. You know, as far as LSU, I mean, I think that was pretty surprising. I know Miami is, you know, we're still kind of in that period where we don't know if last season was, you know, a flash in the pan or if the U is really back. I think last, you know, Saturday showed that it might, you know, take a little bit more time. We might not expect, you know, an 11-win team again. But, you know, hats off to LSU because Ed Orgeron is, you know, on the hot seat. And that was a big-time win for him and his fans. So they really dominated start to finish, especially in the second half, and really put the clamps down defensively, which, you know, is great to see and hopefully makes for a challenging and competitive SEC, because like you said, Neil, you know, going 12-1 in the opening weekend is really not something to sneer at. And, you know, Tennessee being the lone loss, you know, that came to West Virginia, who's a great team in its own respect. So, you know, a lot to look forward to from SEC football.
Kind of on the other side of that, I just continue to be amazed at the resources Texas has and how little they seem to get in terms of national championships with that those resources. They lose to Maryland 34-29, got a big hole, came back, and then lost it again late. Texas again losing early. This seems to be a pattern for that school recently.
Yeah, like you said, you know, they've got their own network. This should be a team that's just kind of rolling in it, and yet it sure seems like they find ways to beat themselves. You know, playing against a team that did not have a coach, I you know, some people might see that as a galvanizing moment for a team, you know, that kind of let's all, you know, rah-rah together and you know, figure this thing out because nobody is giving us a chance. But there was no reason for Texas to lose that game. Not with the recruiting class they're bringing in, not with the resources that they have, not with all the advantages that were built in. May have been on the road, but, you know, there was, I think, no reason for Texas to have dropped that. So, you know, they've got a lot of work to do. There were some, you know, ill-timed turnovers. The defense didn't seem like it was in check pretty much the entire afternoon. I mean, heck, the, you know, Maryland receiver had, in his first college game, a passing touchdown, a rushing touchdown, and a receiving touchdown.
Wow.
All on his first three touches. I mean, so I think that tells you what you need to know about how Texas's defense was doing. But, you know, a lot to iron out for sure, and I'm sure the Longhorns faithful are none too happy this week.
20 years ago here in Murray, Kentucky, Murray State played Western Kentucky. Justin Fuente, the quarterback for the Racers. Willie Taggart, the quarterback for Western Kentucky. Murray State comes away with a win. Fast forward 20 years, Virginia Tech and Florida State, those gentlemen, the head coaches. I tell you what, with Virginia Tech last night, it looked like Frank Beamer was at the helm. The Beamer ball back, they block a punt, score off of that. Virginia Tech looked really good. Florida State didn't look good at all last night.
Yeah, I know. That's incredible. I actually didn't know that they, you know, those coaches went to those respective schools. So, you know, thank you for that. Virginia Tech, like you said, it really did feel like Beamer ball again. That was an incredible block punt for a touchdown. Florida State really just, I mean, I don't know how much sloppier a team can play offensively. It seemed like any time they got within the opponent red zone, they just fell apart. And, you know, they had a missed field goal that was, you know, I think from 32 yards. They had, it just seemed like they just collapsed. And I'm trying to give a little bit longer of a leash to DeAndre Francois, who's coming off, you know, a pretty, terrible injury a season ago. But it was just kind of surprising given what, you know, Willie Taggart's prowess has been since he got into coaching. You know, it's always been the defensive side of the ball that's kind of, you know, been the one that's lacking. And, you know, I think they ran a stat last night about his numbers produced at Oregon and USF. And they were like, you know, averaging 37.5 points a game or something over that stretch. And last night they just, you know, would have killed for a touchdown. And yet, ended up just kind of getting routed. But, you know, a great win for Virginia Tech. I think that's a real strong sign for Justin Fuente and his crew moving forward. Defensively, I don't want to take anything away from them. You know, they really were everywhere. The way they attacked the ball carrier, you know, wherever the ball went, they went. And it was really kind of a terrific showcase of how far that defense has come. So, I think the question all year is going to be what that offense can do. And last night it did more than enough. So Virginia Tech might be a team to watch as the season unfolds.
A lot of really good week one matchups in week two. There's only one game involving two top 25 teams. Shameless plug. That's our WNBS game of the week. That's USC at Stanford, 15 versus 13. But it's a big game for these two schools.
Yeah, USC looked really shaky. UNLV, I think, since maybe 2000 is like the losingest team in the country. But they really kind of took USC. I know they, you know, lost by, I think, 21 points, but it was not that one-sided. And a lot of those scores came late. USC, of course, is breaking in a freshman quarterback who's, you know, could basically be in high school right now, which seems to always be the case for them. But SC's got a lot to iron out. Stanford, conversely, you know, we all assume Bryce Love would run wild, and yet, you know, he got held in check to, you know, I think arguably his worst game as a starting tailback for the Cardinals in week one. But they had a receiver step up, the defense step up. So it'll be a good fight. Usually those are, you know, pretty solid games when those two teams match up. So hopefully we get another installment there.
Want to talk NFL, and before we talk about the couple of games this week and rookies making impacts, the big trade over the weekend between the Raiders and the Bears involving Khalil Mack. Does either team get the edge here, or will this help both teams?
Well, one thing that I've heard, and this is not a unique thought from me, but rather something I'm regurgitating, is draft picks are great until you have to make the pick, and Chicago has really not picked well over the past few seasons. I guess we'll see, you know, Trubisky if he pans out. But right now I would say that has been, you know, an adequate at best, overreach, probably a worse selection. I mean, heck, they could have had Deshaun Watson and not needed to trade up. Chicago traded up to get Mitch Trubisky. So, giving away, you know, two first-round picks and everything else they gave up seems to be, you know, a case of mortgaging your future for the present. But, you know, if you're going to do so, you may as well be a poor drafting team and get the kind of return on investment that the Bears are hoping to get out of Khalil Mack, who is unarguably one of the best defensive players in the whole league, and is, I think, going to make Chicago a terror on defense this season and in the seasons to come if he can stay healthy. They gave him a king's ransom to stay. Obviously, he's the highest paid, I think, defensive player now in NFL history. But, hopefully he earns it, because I think Chicago's doing the right thing given their track record of how terrible of a drafting, you know, franchise that is. So I think it's a good look for Chicago. I'm not really sure I understand it from Oakland's perspective, because I don't really understand a lot of what Gruden's doing there in terms of personnel.
Right.
But, you know, a lot of these things will be, you know, managed and decided upon over time. So we'll see if Oakland can make the most of those picks.
And speaking of second-guessing decisions, two NFL teams apparently are going to go with rookies at quarterback. Sam Darnold, Nathan Peterman getting starts for the Jets and Bills. At least that's what we're hearing heading into this week, Josh.
Yeah, I was kind of blown away that Darnold's the youngest guy in NFL history. I just assumed that there was somebody else out there, but maybe I should have read the fine print. I mean, I didn't realize Sam Darnold was that young. But you know, a great opportunity for him. I wish him well, because to be a starting quarterback in, you know, the largest media market in the country is, you know, clearly comes with its challenges. So I think that'll be an uphill battle for him. But, best of luck. It's good to, you know, continue that streak of, you know, seasons in which a rookie gets to start in week one. I think that's a really great opportunity for us to, you know, have some great stories to tell, especially if things, pan out well for him and the Jets. And, with Peterman, good luck, buddy, because I would not like to throw to those receivers. I think Buffalo's in a real bind. And with that offensive line being what it is, I think it's going to be, rather difficult over the next few weeks. I think they start off with, you know, a murderer's row of defenses to go against. So, I'm looking for better performance out of Darnold than I am out of Peterman.
And it looks like Royce Freeman will get the start at running back for Denver. Is that right?
Yeah, I saw him run a little bit at Nebraska. He got injured in the game, but I'm a big fan of Rolls-Royce. Anybody with a car attached to the nickname, I'm a big fan of. And he's a phenomenal rusher. I think he's something like top 15 all-time in career rushing yards in college. So if he can, you know, kind of put it on display and hopefully not be, you know, the next Sean Marino, I think he'll be just fine. Denver's just kind of had some tough luck with running backs lately. So maybe he'll be the one to break the streak.
Josh, final question before I let you go. The Steelers still no Le'Veon Bell, contract issues. How long can they go without him?
Well, I mean, they can go, you know, all season long. I think he's going to have to start forfeiting money if he, you know, doesn't show up for games. I understand where he's coming from, but it sure seemed like when his agent came out and said this is the last season Le'Veon will play for the Steelers, that was the end of it, that, you know, you're going to get him on the franchise tag, and he just wasn't going to re-sign. But if he feels like it's in his best interest to not, get run into the ground in a contract year, then, who am I to tell him that, he needs to get out there and play?
Sure.
I can understand from his perspective, given what Pittsburgh has put him through as far as workload is concerned, why he would want a little bit more security than that. But at the same time, he's going to start, you know, giving up money if he doesn't show up. So we'll see. I would expect him to show up a lot of times. You know, just having that tape is really important. I know that some teams might be willing to take a flyer on a guy who, you know, let's just say hypothetically he sits out the whole season. I think some teams would take a flyer on him, but I think a lot of teams would be averse to the thought that somebody would willingly withhold themselves from the field,
right,
in order to make a statement like that. So, I guess we'll kind of find out how much, you know, he really wants to play and, you know, whether or not he thinks he's going to sacrifice his future for the present.
Again, Josh, thanks as usual. Josh, again, we'll have something up the Washington Post on Michigan and Coach Harbaugh, so you'll be able to read that in the next day or two. Appreciate it, Josh. Hopefully you'll get some football in there in Nebraska, and we'll talk about that next week, all right?
Sounds good. Thanks for having me.
All right, thanks a lot to Josh. Let's go ahead and get you caught up chronologically. We, of course, told you about the Racer game when we did Friday's show. That was a Thursday night game. But Friday night, a big night for Callaway County. They get their first win. Remember, they didn't win a game last year. They already have put one in the win column as they defeat Metcalf County 19-14. It makes it for a good homecoming night for Callaway. And the Lakers get the victory. They'll try to go back-to-back when they take on a Marshall County team that put 70 on Ballard Memorial. They trailed early, but what a shootout this was. Marshall County beating Ballard Memorial by a score of 70-52. We'll have that game this week, Callaway and Marshall County from Draffinville, and the airtime for that will be 6:30 on 104.5 WBZB. Meanwhile, Murray High hosting Madisonville. They had their opportunities. Madisonville with a terrific team, great ground game, and Murray High unable to stop them enough. Madisonville comes away with a 29-15 victory. So Murray will bounce back against Fort Campbell. This will be a road game, and we'll have that one with coverage starting at 6 Friday on 1340 WNBS and 1340WNBS.com. The other game saw Fulton County roll Fulton City 70-0. Crittenden County beat Trigg 46-7. It was Hopkinsville defeating Caldwell County 35-20. Mayfield, little trouble early, but they pull away from Tillman 51-27. McCracken County also with an early hole, but they dig out of it and beat Graves County 38-27. Muhlenberg over Hopkins Central 14-6. Union beat Webster 37-8. And let's see, I think I had one more in there. Henderson County over Christian County 28-7. Now on to college football. We told you Jacksonville State, they played in week one. Three OVC teams played on Thursday night. SIU beating Murray State 49-10. Eastern Kentucky downing Morehead State 49-23. And Chattanooga defeating Tennessee Tech 34-10. Everyone else getting in action on Saturday. And they were all paycheck games except for one. Tennessee State hosted Bethune-Cookman, and TSU picks up a 34-3 win. How good is Tennessee State? I don't know. They did pick up some top 25 votes this past week, a few of them, but I don't know if they're any good or not. I'm not sure about Bethune-Cookman, although they're coming off a pretty decent year. All the paycheck games didn't go anybody's way. Georgia beat Austin-Peay 45-0. But Georgia's ranked third in the nation. Racers get a taste of Georgia next year when they play there. Arkansas handled Eastern Illinois 55-20. Though pretty impressive for EIU to put 20 on Arkansas. Mizzou defeated UT Martin 51-14. And Arkansas State over SEMO 48-21. From that game, though, Zach Hall had 22 tackles, the most by an NCAA player at any level this season. In that loss, the junior had 9 solo tackles, 13 assisted tackles. He added a tackle for loss and a forced fumble. 22 tackles tied for the third most in SEMO history and the fifth time in his last six games dating back to last season that Hall has double-digit tackles. It was the most tackles by an OVC player since 2008 when Murray State's Nathan Williams logged 23 tackles. So Zach Hall, no doubt there, he is the defensive player of the week in the OVC. The offensive player of the week, Alexander Hollins, wide receiver out of Eastern Illinois. He accounted for all three touchdowns in the Panthers' season-opening game against Arkansas. He caught a career-high 9 passes for 127 yards and a touchdown in each the second, third, and fourth quarters. Co-specialist of the week, Sam Hayworth, kicker out of Eastern Kentucky. He connected on field goals of 38 and 27 yards and 5 for 5 on extra point attempts in Eastern Kentucky's win over Morehead State last Thursday. Antonio Zeta, kicker for Tennessee State, is the co-specialist of the week, sharing that honor with Hayworth. He had a pair of 23-yard field goals and 4 for 4 on point afters in the win over Bethune-Cookman. The newcomer of the week is Zarek Cooper out of Jacksonville State. In his debut, the transfer from Clemson completed 24 of 38 passes for 320 yards and 2 touchdowns and ran 8 times for 37 yards in the loss to North Carolina A&T. Like, well, is Jacksonville State really that good? I mean, they lost to North Carolina A&T, even though North Carolina A&T was ranked. Well, North Carolina A&T went out and picked up a bowl division win this past week. And subsequently, they're ranked 5th in the nation in the latest FCS coaches poll. They're number 5, North Carolina State number 1, James Madison 2, South Dakota State 3, Sam Houston State 4, and there's North Carolina A&T in number 5. Jacksonville State slips to 13th. Central Arkansas, Murray State's opponent this coming week, is number 17. Austin-Peay was in the poll. They're out. They did pick up 343 total votes. Tennessee State with 22 total votes. Both of those not in the top 25 poll. All right, let's take a look at what we have coming up this week in the OVC. There is one Thursday night game. This game is on ESPNU. You'll see Kennesaw State play at Tennessee Tech in a 6 o'clock kickoff. Kennesaw State is good. Number 7 ranked in the nation. So Tech will get quite a taste there. Everything else, though, this week besides that one is on Saturday. Dayton is at SEMO. Eastern Kentucky is at Marshall. Mississippi Valley State plays at Jacksonville State. Tennessee State plays Jackson State in Memphis. I think that's the Heritage Classic. Usually a massive crowd there at the Liberty Bowl. Presbyterian will play at Austin Peay. UT Martin at Middle Tennessee. Eastern Illinois plays at number 19, Illinois State. And Murray State, again, at number 17, Central Arkansas. We'll have more on that as the week unfolds. But that has you caught up on all that. There's some high school sports tonight to tell you about as well. And girls soccer and boys soccer, Callaway County at Mayfield. Girls play at 5, boys at 7. In volleyball tonight, Callaway County will play at Christian Fellowship. Bryce Harper, a game-tying 2-run homer in the 9th. Sac fly in the 10th. And Nats beat the Cardinals 4-3 in D.C. That's 3 straight losses for the Cardinals. But at the moment, they still hold on to that number 2 wild card spot ahead of the Dodgers by 1 game. They'll take on the Nats again tonight. 5:10 the airtime, 6:05. Game. Now, Adam Wainwright will be back in the Cardinals rotation next week. The right-hander will start against the Pirates next Monday at home. Wainwright's been on the DL with elbow issues most of the season. He completed his rehab assignment this past weekend with a scoreless outing for Triple-A Memphis. The division champion Memphis Redbirds into the regular season with a 6-5 loss at Nashville. The Sounds rallied with 4 runs in the bottom of the 8th to pull out the win. Memphis finishes the season 83-57. That's tied for the second most wins in franchise history. The playoffs begin tomorrow either at Colorado Springs or Oklahoma City. The season is over for Nashville and Louisville. Louisville's season ending in a 4-0 loss to Indianapolis. And the Tennessee Titans getting set for the season opener. They prepare for Sunday's opener at Miami. Offensive tackle Jack Conklin returned to practice yesterday. He spent all of training camp on the PUP list. And last night, it was a renewal of, remember when Willie Taggart was at the helm, the quarterback for Western Kentucky. Justin Fuente, the quarterback for Murray State back in 1998, Stewart Stadium. The Racers pick up a win over the Hilltoppers. Fast forward 20 years, they're head coaches now. Fuente at Virginia Tech, Taggart at Florida State. And once again, Fuente gets the best of Willie Taggart with a 24-3 win. Virginia Tech winning. Frank Beamer was there, had a couple of shots of him during that game as Virginia Tech looked really good in that 24-3 victory over Florida State. All right, that's going to wrap it up for us. Ed Marlowe scheduled to be on the show tomorrow. Look forward to chatting with Ed about more college football and maybe a little NFL talk tomorrow, too. It's all coming up on tomorrow's Neil Bradley Show at 1340WNBS.com.
You have been listening to The Neil Bradley Show, or you have fast-forwarded to this point and skipped the show entirely. Tune in weekdays for The Neil Bradley Show on 1340WNBS.com or subscribe free by searching for The Neil Bradley Show on the iTunes podcast app. The Neil Bradley Show is a presentation of WNBS Sports in conjunction with Forever Communications.